Welcome to Gnostic Warrior Radio, broadcasting from GnosticWarrior.com. Today we have Vinny Eastwood, all the way from New Zealand, from the VinnyEastwoodShow.com, American Freedom Radio. He's broadcasting daily for at least it's 2 hours a day, Vinny?
Yeah, 5 days a week, yeah, minimum.
Yeah. He's probably, I'd say, one of the hardest working out there in the blogging, and if you want to say the truth movement, I've been watching him and his videos. If I watched him every single day, to be honest, I probably would I would never get anything done, Vinny. You know, that's how much you work.
Well, I don't watch anybody else's videos either.
Exactly, and that's what I want to get into a little bit. We'll talk about that as far as getting things done, and you know, you're an inspiration for my podcast. You know, this is going to be my first video feed. Again, it's pre-recorded, but still, it's a video and so forth. I'm used to kind of just talking in front of a microphone. Actually, I blogged for a total of 6 years before I got in front of the microphone. So it takes a lot of guts and a lot of talent to get in front and talk for that many hours daily. So, you know, how do you do it? You know, let's first start off, Vinny Eastwood. Where did you come from? I know you're in New Zealand now. How old are you? A little bit about your background and where you come from.
Okay. Well, I live in Auckland, New Zealand, the largest city in the country. Has the most amount of protests and public meetings and stuff like that up here. So it's kind of where I need to be, because I often go out to protests and a camera. How I started was I had three jobs with telecommunications companies, give me a real bad taste in my mouth, like one after the other. First one, I got promoted because I was so damn good at selling, and I was the number one salesman in the residential division, so they moved me to business. And then I realized that, hey, they're not actually changing my job description at all. I'm still just doing outbound cold calling telesales, or telemarketing, as Americans would call it. And I didn't want to do that anymore. You know, once you achieve the pinnacle of anything, the challenge basically isn't there anymore. And so you don't want to do it anymore. You want to go on to new challenges, new experiences. And so I started looking at what was wrong with the company, and I wound up writing a 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company, to do with staff retention, training programs, all of that kind of stuff, which could have massively the workings and day-to-day runnings of the company, but they weren't interested. And so they paid me $3,000 to leave within 5 minutes. And so I was like,
how old were you at that time when you were at that job?
I think I was like 24. No, might have been 22. And what occurred to me at that point is that, hey, you know, I haven't had a summer holiday in a long time. $3,000 could probably buy me a nice couple of a month or two without work. So that's exactly what I did. Then I got another job, and they promoted me really, really quickly. Like every other week, I was getting a promotion into a new position, because I was just like dominating, just bam, bam, bam. And then it turned out that once they promoted me for the last time, they sent me out doing sales again, you know, face-to-face, driving around. I had to pay for my own cell phone, had to pay for my own gas, and they were sending me to, like, way out places that were just completely ridiculous and what have you. And I wound up having to pay about $50 a week to work 40 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, so those jobs are in America, the same thing, you know.
Yeah, I was getting into debt working, you know, it's stupid. And so I had to quit that job, and one of the people in that position as well with me quit at the same time and started up another company that I worked for, and I made more money than I'd ever made in my life. Like, my last paycheck was like $4,000 cash plus $11,900 worth of Westfield shopping center vouchers. There's a big mall chains down here in Southern Hemisphere, right? So I bought my Mac, bought my camera, quit my job, and got the hell out there, started filming protests and public meetings, because I've been listening to Alex Jones and watching Luke Rutkowski and We Are Change and all of that kind of stuff. Wow. And what occurred to me is that I was looking around, hey, is there somebody like that in New Zealand? No, nobody. There's nobody. Nothing of any kind, yeah, really. I mean,
you saw a need in the market there for that.
A gap in the market.
A gap in the market. Definitely.
I mean, the only other person... The only other people that were doing a publication of sorts was these guys here from Uncensored magazine, and I met up with Jonathan Eisen, who's the editor of this magazine. working and befriended him. And then when I went out and started doing all these activism and protesting and stuff like that, he saw the value in having somebody with a camera and who's good on a megaphone and all of that kind of stuff. And we've developed a good working relationship, although he never watches my videos or listens to any of my shows, and I never read his magazine. You know, just doing it anyway. And it was simply the matter of attending protests, attending public meetings, filming them, editing the videos, and then getting them up online for people. Because when you go to a public meeting, there's 20 people there, and they're talking about something that really does affect the entire country, you know, like very public meetings, which there's just political apathy about, or maybe it's raining and few people don't want to come out in there. So I put that up online, and you manage to get a hell of a lot more people actually watching the video than you do actually attending the thing. So I'm increasing single-handedly 3 to 4 to 5-fold what people were actually able to see. And the wow. same thing is true of protesting as well. You know, a protest, you know, a few thousand people or whatever, maybe a few hundred people on the sides of the road might see them going past, and then nothing happens and there's no record of it and nobody online gets to see it at all. So I took personal responsibility for that fact, started making those videos. Then I became very I wouldn't say I became very popular. I got noticed, at least, by Mr. Mitch Santel, who at the time was producing a show called The American Freedom Report with Dave Von Kleist of 9/11 in Plain Sight, and Brent Johnson, the voice of freedom. And Brent Johnson was looking for a new co-host because Dave, the official story is Dave had communication issues down in Argentina where he was. And they brought me on as co-host. And the ratings shot up. Like the show was really, really low rated once Dave left. And when I came on as co-host, they just shot right up. So people really responded to a New Zealander knowing more about American life and culture and scumbaggery than most Americans actually do. And then American Freedom Radio decided to fire Brent and give me the show. and now I'm in my third year, five days a week. Basically producing it all by myself. You know, I record the videos, I edit the videos, I upload the videos, I record the audio, edit the audio, upload the audio, I create the blog posting, I create the snapshots of my guests and things like that and put them up on the website. I have lists, long lists of people that I've interviewed. You know, I've shockingly large amount of work, more work than most people, as you say, you know, hardest working person in the truth movement. I don't think I am, though. Maybe one of the people who produces the most content, for sure, but yeah. I've developed methodologies that make things very, very quickly. So, for instance, doing 2 hours of radio for somebody to edit and upload that would take me 40 minutes or so. All right, that's just the audio. The video just takes a long time to process, but I've got these simple templates in my editing software where I'll just pop all the videos in, drag this, drag that, whatever, and then boom, video processes. It takes about an hour to process, but I don't have to be there working while I'm doing it. You know, I nip off and I have a coffee or whatever. So yeah.
And meanwhile, you're getting constant content out there every day. Your footprint every single day is getting out there, and on top of YouTube being a video sharing network and everybody sharing your videos as well.
Yeah, indeed. And I have the most subscribed YouTube news channel in New Zealand. If you have a look at even the mainstream news networks that are operating in New Zealand, have less subscribers than I do.
Wow.
All right. And in fact, I've got more than pretty much all of them combined at this point. That includes the mainstream radio stations, the mainstream news stations, and the mainstream newspapers who all have YouTube channels and put their YouTube videos up every other day or so. I'm putting on average 4 videos a day, 4 to 5, plus on top of that all the audio archiving and stuff like that. So I'm producing actually more original content per day than a lot of individuals who are in the professional sector. And I'm doing that all by myself, supported by donations pretty much alone, the listeners who support me, and all the guests and everything that I have on, they're not getting paid. They give freely of their time to discuss and inform people about the true nature of reality, and in particular the horrible things that are happening to people every single day in this world. And I feel a moral obligation, because I've got a platform of some kind, because I can produce the content for them, to do it, because they deserve the coverage.
Yeah, I agree, Vinny. You know, and you've been doing this day in and day out, and you've been going on shows like mine. You know, it took you about a month to get back to me, like 3 weeks, which I understood completely, and but you got back to me and you agreed to do it. You know, and it's so cool that people like you are willing to do that on top of everything that you're doing, you know, and I appreciate that. And there's a lot of people out here that do, you know, and you're an inspiration to myself. You know, I have several people that I watched. You know, I was one of those guys on the sideline, you know, not producing content really in this movement as far as the truth movement. But watching guys like yourself, of course, the shows that interested me the most, and that's how I found you on YouTube. And then I was like, who's this dude? And you made me laugh. And really, there is very few people that can make me fucking laugh, you know, and you're one of those guys where you could put, you know, the laughter in this. And, you know, there, it's a serious subject, a lot of the things that you talk about all the time, but you put a spin to it and you make everybody laugh, and that's important, I think. And you know that and you realize that, because fear and anger and all the stuff that this could bring on brings you down. And I know you realize that. So it's cool how you could maintain this cool attitude. I've seen you, though, because I'm your friend on Facebook. Sometimes the shit gets you down once in a while, but for the most part, you're up and you realize, you know, hey, I'm not going to deal with those people. Delete them. You know, you don't have time for them. You know, that's cool. How do you deal with all the negativity and still being positive like you are?
Well, it's how do you deal with negativity and still remain positive? I don't think I have remained overly positive, and I don't think I am dealing with the negativity. I think I'm mostly ignoring it, because I want to spend my time having fun and conversing with people whose opinions actually matter and are based on fact, based upon real human intellect, real feeling. And those other people, they're not worth my fucking time.
No, I agree. I agree. So that this does affect you is what you're saying. All this, you know, I mean, you're in some hardcore shit with your protesting.
It's a facade, man. It's a facade. You know, all the comedy and the laughter and everything is basically just to mask the fact that I'm feeling really sad, really overworked, and trying to help people deal with it themselves, even though I'm having a hard time dealing with it. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
We're all in this together in a lot of ways. I happen to just have the unique talent of laughing at things that are really horrific, you know? And that's all that we see most of the time, you know, bombs, fucking plagues, and goodness knows how many vaccines, and the fluoride and the chemtrails and goodness knows what else, and you can depress the living hell out of you. And I happen to be able to make jokes about it, but at the end of the day, it's just not funny, and it's just a fake facade that I've put on in order to cope with it.
Yeah, and you got to. You know, I've been in terrible situations myself, and you got to put a facade on, and it's a way of dealing with the negativity and the stuff that you see. You know, I wanted to talk about, like, the truth. What's interesting to me is here you are, you're in New Zealand, right? And I'm here in America, and we're two guys chatting about some hardcore things. We haven't got really into it yet, but, you know, we're going to. You know, on your show daily, I don't think there's anything taboo that I have not heard on your show. It's just like you range every subject from A to Z. Vinny's going to cover it. Okay, you ready to do the show? You're going to do it. And I've never seen anything edited out or no truth that you haven't covered, you know. I don't know where I was going to go with the question there. But basically – lost myself right there, Vinny.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe the question that you're trying to form is there anything that I avoid talking about or avoid covering on the show, maybe?
Yeah, is there anything like that's taboo? And if there's anything also that is the most memorable to you, So if there's anything taboo, if not, if that's a real short answer, is there anything that's taboo?
Well,
not
let's
taboo,
go with,
but that's the most memorable.
Well, let's take the second question for first. Is there anything memorable?
Okay.
In my first year of doing radio in 2010, when I'd get guests like George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM, who has 29 million listeners on a bad night. This is how my girlfriend gave me the nickname Skippy, because I was kind of like skipping around the apartment. You're like, oh my God, I'm interviewing George Norrie. I was just totally excited. And I'm very tall. I'm 6'4". And I skipped through the door frame and then banged my head on the top of the door frame. So that's actually the most memorable part of my career thus far, being so excited that I hurt myself. And in terms of taboo topics, well, I'm under FCC regulations during my shows, so I'm not allowed to say any swear words, basically. So those are taboo. And the other part of it is Alex Jones. You know, Alex Jones was one of my prime examples and inspirations for getting into the truth movement. The problem being is that the owner of American Freedom Radio used to be Alex Jones' producer and has had a terrible raft of things that Jones has done to him, which is why he's his former producer, including literally stealing things off him, like stealing advertisers, stealing a radio transmitter and all this kind of stuff. And it's really nasty. And you kind of realize and you sit back, you know, fallen heroes. It's like in Batman. You either, what was the saying? You either die the hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the bad guy. And I'm not allowed to mention Alex Jones or really InfoWars on the show, really at all, because of that fact. I mean, it's like they won't fire me if I talk about it a little bit or whatever.
If it comes up, because I agree. I've seen that on a few shows where it's came up.
Yeah, it comes up.
Briefly, yeah.
But I'm not really allowed to talk about it, sort of thing, or keep it going. And we've had guests on who have spoken positively of Alex Jones, and you'll notice that I'm very quiet and stuff like that. And then we have guests on who speak very negatively of Alex Jones. And again, I'm still just kind of sitting there being relatively quiet. You know, I mean, like the guests can talk about whatever they want. I can't control them. But I have to control myself, you know. Even though he was a hero of mine, it just kind of feels like he's not who I wanted to be. Like I think when I originally started off doing all this, I wanted to be friends of New Zealand, and now I'm thinking I want Alex Jones to be known as the Vinnie Eastwood of America, in order to maintain some sort of independence, to get out from under his shadow. He's so huge and enormous and brilliant at what he does. He's extraordinary filmmaker, the best person in the world without question at waking people up and making things better in terms of a fertile truth movement, really. That's basically what Alex Jones has come to represent for me as a fertilizer of the truth movement, really.
No, I agree. He was one of the first people that I actually, you know, in researching this movement, he was one of the first people that I have actually saw. And I actually had a website, a blog called Free or Die that I was writing for, and my website, loansafe.org. And I wrote a couple articles for Alex Jones, and he published them on InfoWars. One was called The Case for Killing Junior. It was about the one-child policy in China. And it got published on there, and it had all kinds of comments, and it went well. And I did another one about CIA drug running and different stuff like that, and that they were possibly tainting the drugs. And I was just new into the movement, just like, you know, I'm going to write this article because I found some information, and I tied this specific chemical to 70% of the cocaine that was being brought into the United States, and it happens to mutate your DNA. And I'm really good at research and shit because I've done really well with my websites that I am doing now. I have GnosticWarrior.com, which I'm interviewing for now, but LoneSafe.org which does really well, where I fought the banks here in America, and I help people with their mortgage and fighting them and so forth. But anyways, I wrote these articles, and I wrote that last article, and literally I wrote another article, and they wouldn't accept it anymore. I was just pretty much banned. And within a day, there was cars going by my house. I lived in a gated community area, like 5-acre plots. No one ever drives down them at the end of this area, walking my dog and my kids. And there was these guys with big aviator glasses, just like the fucking movies, Vinny, just like the movies, coming by my house constantly. And it was like a sign. And I go, what did I do? You know, because I've been in trouble before with the law, so I'm really intuitive about the law and so forth. I got in trouble for marijuana and stuff here in California.
Me too.
But anyways, you got in trouble at one time?
Yeah. Not in California, of course.
Yeah, in New Zealand. What happened there?
I got...
Let's get into that in a second. Yeah. Let me finish the story because I'll lose my train of thought. But anyways, they kept driving by the house, and I was wondering what I did in the interim. And the only thing I could think of is I wrote that article, you know, and then it made me like look and going, what the fuck's going on? And I was looking at Alex and kind of researched his background and so forth. And I saw the normal stuff that everybody else sees. And, you know, I just kind of tied everything to he was involved. He's like kind of just controlled truth movement. You know, that's what I just believe, you know. So in any event, what happened with your marijuana bust?
Oh, this was kind of like my first real experience in life, I think. My very first job out of high school was writing, directing, and producing a play in my local town, Waiheke Island, and raising enough money to go to university down in Dunedin. It's one of the coldest cities in the country. I watched my olive oil freeze at room temperature. Were mushrooms growing out of the side of the house. When I woke up in the morning, there was a thin film of water, a condensation on my blanket kind of thing. Like really, really horrible living conditions. And my girlfriend at the time left back for Japan. My friend who I was living down there was mooching off me, and he wouldn't pay me back. And I was just basically in a really bad place. And I started selling weed to people. It was because I was really lonely, you know. Like, whenever you're selling weed, people come around to your house and they sit down, they have a smoke with you, and you talk and you have some laughs and stuff like that. And I was a very nice drug dealer, I was. so nice, in fact, that anybody who came up to my door would walk away with something, you know, and just like, yeah, thank you very much, you know, that's cool, man, that's cool, you know. Come back anytime, it's no worries, and just friendly. And then one of them knocked on me, and I remember the police and the dogs walking up my path coming into my house. I was like, fuck, I'm so screwed, man. And so I grabbed my my rolled up tinnies, you know, just basically in New Zealand, the way you sell weed is you roll up about a gram worth of ganj into a little bit of tin foil, and you roll it up, and that's called a bullet or a tinny, and you sell that to
gotcha.
People. So they,
what's that go for? Or what did it go for then?
Well, see, it depends on the dealer and it depends on the region. So up here in Auckland, average is 1 gram for about $20. And that price hasn't changed. You know, it's like weed's inflation proof. Do you know that?
Yeah.
And down in Dunedin, it was $25 for about 0.75 grams. And me being a bit of an ingenious businessman, I decided to roll them up in half grams and sell them for $20 down there. Just a really, really good skunk. And, I was caught with 13 grams and I was going to go to jail for up to 8 years.
Wow.
All right. They treat selling, drugs more seriously, even C-class drugs like cannabis. They treat that more seriously in this country than manslaughter. My mother had to come down from Waiheke Island, fly the length of the country, and then she booked me into a hotel, and she took me on for a 3-day holiday out to the Catlin coast, and we stayed in this little bed and breakfast. And then when I came home, my flatmates had stolen pretty much everything out of my room. They'd stolen my camera, they'd stolen my stereo, they'd stolen my lava lamp, my clock radio, my money out of my change jar to buy cigarettes.
And they knew what happened to you.
Yeah, they knew.
Jeez.
They were there when it happened.
Kick you when you're down.
Yep, and it was at that point that I suddenly realized I didn't want to be in the city anymore. I didn't want to know these people. I just wanted to get the hell out of here. I wanted to go home. They just my mother $10,000 on a lawyer, $10,000 that she didn't have on a credit card, on a lawyer, so that she could just keep me out of jail. You know, I'm a really, really kind, sensitive, loving, caring guy. Jail would have killed me, like maybe literally.
Yeah, I've done time myself. I don't think it would have. You would have got by on your personality and, you know, your size, and I don't think people would have took advantage of you or anything like that. You would have been just fine in there. But I just facing that much time, and New Zealand takes it. Do they still take it serious like that to this day?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Well, dig this. This is the irony of the situation. When I was coming up to the dock, right, there are two people in front of me, and I got to see their judgments. First guy, he was up for sexual assault. He assaulted his missus sexually. He was growing 3 cannabis plants in his cupboard, and he had resisted arrest. He got 150 hours community service. Next guy comes up, recovering heroin addict, just came out of rehab, and he'd stolen a jar of Craig's raspberry jam from the local BP service station, and he was ordered to pay reparations of $3.85 to replace the jar of Craig's jam for the BP Corporation. And then I got up for 13 grams of cannabis rolled up in tinnies ready for sale. And I get 300 hours of community service. And I was very lucky that I didn't go to jail. That just seemed totally fucked up to me. That didn't make any sense to me. I was non-violent. I was kind. Didn't sell to anybody who was under 18. What were they thinking? And the answer is there is not a whole lot of thought there in there. It's just corruption. And the police, even though I confession and gave them all of my stuff, they didn't even have to search my house for it. I'd bring it all out and handed it to them, you know. They didn't even have to do any searching. And they still made up evidence in the court case against me. They took what I told them, extrapolated, manipulated, and fudged the figures. And they said, oh, this guy must have sold $40,000 worth of cannabis in the last 6 months. I'm a student in a flat who is broke as a motherfucker.
That's what people need to realize if you've ever had a case against you. It doesn't matter if you're guilty. There's always about 80% of it, or, you know, not 80%, but there's a good percentage added on in charges, just so you'll plead to something, you know, in the long run. And that happened to me as well. So, and they'll lie or do whatever they have to do, even when they have a case against you, just to put the nails more in the coffin, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when I was in trouble in Riverside County, they had a 98% conviction rate. You know, it's all about their, you know, the DA getting his conviction on you, and you get taking your plea. And what would happen if you were to get in trouble again? You would definitely face that type of time, right?
No. I mean, well, maybe if I was caught for the same thing, but I got caught for smoking.
It's the sales. That was the big thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I got caught smoking a joint. And not to mention, this was in Dunedin. In Dunedin, it's a lot harsher than, say, in Auckland. In Auckland, I got busted with a joint. And I pled guilty, paid $150, and I was out the next day. You know,
Here they throw it on the ground, or they throw it away.
Yeah,
you know, a joint or something like that's usually nothing. You know, and you might get a ticket, but here you could, you know, you have your medical marijuana license in California, which we have, but they still the feds are coming in. I'm sure you've had you know about that.
Yeah, the DEA raids on exactly. Cannabis shops. Yeah.
Yeah, I figured you knew. You know basically everything. You've probably interviewed someone talking about that. But yeah, that's what's happening here. Everything's shut down. I'm in San Diego in Southern California, and there was a cannabis cafes or whatever you would go to and get it. They're all shut down from DEA raids or threats. And then we had deliveries, and they were just sent letters, or the newspaper actually put out a release that they're going to go after them next. So everybody's shutting down because they don't want to get in trouble.
See,
you know, but it's legal, the state, but the feds come in and shut it down.
Yeah, that's how you know you're a slave. When by abiding by the law, you become criminalized. Now, people don't know the difference between crime and criminalization. Okay. If you're smoking a joint, okay, here's the basic principle of it. Okay, has somebody been harmed? You know, like physically, somebody been physically harmed by you because you were smoking a joint? No. Has property been damaged because you were smoking a joint? Or did you steal somebody's property because you were smoking that joint? No. Then it's none of your fucking business. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's been used for 10,000 years. Hasn't killed a single person in all of that recorded history. As Jack Harris said, the only person who's ever been killed by marijuana has been shot in the back running away from the police.
Yeah, it seems like, as far as like use goes here, they don't mind, but once you get into sales, it's like a completely different story. It's like, you know, if you're smoking it or whatever, and they catch you with a little, but once you get into the sales, you're like, you're cutting into Caesar's money or something. You know, you cannot do that. And then, of course, the big pharma, which, of course, you know, I think there's a big conspiracy there, and marijuana has.
I think the cops are just protecting their turf, because we should know by now that they're the ones who sell the fucking drugs in America.
They're the big gang, right?
And they're a big gang here too. I've many reports from New Zealand activists have been exposing this. And what the cops do here on occasion is they will, you know how gangs, they have like gang houses and they'll be on a street and, you know, they've got the big walls around them and whatever. And somebody goes up to buy something and a slot opens, the drugs come out and the money goes in, kind of thing. Right?
Yeah.
Well, the cops will raid one house on one side of the street that's controlled by a gang, steal all their ecstasy tablets, and then go across the road to another gang and give them the ecstasy tablets in exchange for either cash or a hit. The cops pay the gangs to kill people that they can't kill. Right?
Yeah.
It's fucking sick.
How do you have knowledge of this?
A couple of activists have been telling me this for a long time. And what was his name? If you talk to one of my mates, Daniel Ryder, he's been railing against the gangs and the child pedophile services. Is that what CPS stands for, child pedophile services? I think so. In New Zealand and our branch of it here. And this is the things that he's told me. And he's personally taken a baseball bat to a gang house and beaten the hell out of every single one of the gang members in there and says, you guys are now moving out. Like, he used to be in the K1 kickboxing championships, you know, no fear. He sees them selling crack to kids. He walks over there with a baseball bat. They stop selling crack to kids, you know. That's the kind of man he is. He's the only person that I've known who's actually willing to, like, you know, just full on march in there. There's one case where one of the child protection people was taking kids in a garage, bunk beds. Yeah, 10 kids on bunk beds in his garage, and he was working for the state, hiring these kids out to local pedophiles, and he was dealing meth at the same time. Daniel took his truck over there, wrapped a chain around the garage door and ripped it off. And then he got all those kids out of there. You know, when he told me that, I was like, Daniel, you're a fucking hero. And he's,
yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, man. And the corruption, I think, is something that it not only enlightens you as to the worst in people, but how people react to it often informs you as the best of people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree, Vinny. What's interesting to me, and where I think I was going earlier with one of the questions or the subject I wanted to get into, what was interesting is, you know, I'm here in America, you're there in New Zealand, and like I said, there's nothing that you really is not taboo on your show, except you said, you know, Alex Jones or cussing, which to me, that's really very little taboo area. And here we are able to find out all this freaking terrible shit that they're freaking doing to us, the powers that be. We're I think the first time in history where we really don't know who the powers that be are. It's the Illuminati. It's the Club of 300. It's the Bilderbergers. It's, you know what I mean? It's always this different kind of group. And it's, you know, this we're like born into this fucking conspiracy. Literally, from day one, it's like a magic trick. Bam, upside down. What you see is not what you get from day one. And it's not till you wake up. And as you know, 99% of the people aren't awake. But, you know, such as myself, I feel I'm awake. I'm still awakening. I have a long way to go, you know, on myself. And you said yourself, you know, you're not happy-go-lucky all the time. It's a facade. And, you know, that it's rough. But how are we able to break through, you know, guys like me and you, and find these truths and share them and fucking not get killed and avoid them as well? It's like there's a minefield over there. There's barbed wire right there. Hey, wait, that's poison, dude. Don't drink that. You know, and we know this shit. It's like they're telling us all the shit that they're doing to us, right?
My philosophy is know the poison. And drink it anyway. I say, gotcha. Fuck it, man. Look, you know,
you're gonna die anyway, huh?
I'm gonna die anyway. You know, I avoid the fluoridated water a bit, and I try to use natural soaps and stuff like that. But
if you're thirsty and you need a fucking drink, and there's government supplied fluoridated water right there, you're gonna drink it.
Exactly.
Of course.
I mean, it's just like, look, you know, you can't escape. Okay,
you can't. There is simply right.
There is no escape, and to try to do the impossible drives you crazy, doesn't it? Whereas it does. If you have a philosophical moment about it, and you go, "Hey, you know what? I know that they're poisoning the cigarettes and the water and the alcohol and the air and all of this electromagnetic radiation around me from all these electronic devices, and that every single one of my rights is being stripped away from me, and vitamins are being taken off the shelves, being replaced with pharmaceutical drugs, and so on and so forth. I'm still trying to have a fun, happy life, and it's very difficult, and it's very difficult to do that when you know the truth about everything. So you just kind of have to, or at least, when I hate giving people advice because one size does not fit all. My methodology does not work for anybody but me, maybe. And not even work, maybe I'm just fucking kidding myself because I can't be bothered actually following through with any of the shit that I think. I could just be sitting around drinking, smoking, drinking and having coffee and what have you, having a good time, and instead of bitching at myself and going, "Oh, Vinny, you're having a cigarette. Oh, Vinny, you're drinking caffeine. It's all controlled by the New World Order. You're a scumbag." Like, you know, it's stupid, man. I'm just enjoying myself. I'm just having fun. And in my work life, like this is my work kind of here, I'm exposing scumbaggery. I feel that counterbalances the situation. I actually love the system that we work in. I love the fact that at midnight, when I've got the munchies because I'm baked as a motherfucker, I can drive down to Carl's Jr., an American corporation, and get myself a big, fat, famous star with cheese, okay? I actually like the convenience that we've got in our society. I like that I can purchase liquor 24 hours a day. I can get in of food, drinking water, I can fill up my car with gas or wherever. You know, I'm very, very unrestricted. It's only once you actually get some goddamn a bureaucrat or uniformed officer in your face that it suddenly becomes real. Okay? The vast majority of the time, even when you're fighting against them all the time, you don't see those people. They don't invade your life. And that's the way I like to keep it. So when I'm talking to cops or whatever, I'm not saying you're a New World Order scumbag and I'm sorry, I'm ranting. I promise I'd take your calls. You know, I don't go up to them and be mean to them or anything like that. I try as I may to get the humanity out of them. Okay, there's got to be some in there, otherwise they're not human. And very, very few cops I've come across have actually really responded positively. A lot of them really are inhuman. Okay, no sense of humor, no care for the positive people, shove you around and push you for no reason whatsoever. Okay, I remember one time we were having a 9/11 truth protest on the side of the street. and a little council Nazi with a little clipboard says, you can't use a voice amplification device, you can't hand out flyers, you can't hand out DVDs, or we're going to fine you and confiscate your megaphone and confiscate your DVDs and confiscate your flyers, and then we'll see you in court. So it's like, fuck! Okay, then. I have a louder voice than most people would realize. So I started, you know, doing this with the hands cupped to the side of the street, talking about how we can't hand out flyers, we can't hand out DVDs. Doesn't that sound a wee bit fascistic? And some slave, fluoride head, walks past me, behind me, you can see him in the camera, walks past me, and then he turns around and comes back and shoves me. And then we call the cops. You know, there's just a police officer rolling down right next to us on the main.
Just some random guy.
So I wave the cop over. Excuse me, this guy assaulted me. I'd like to press charges, et cetera, et cetera. So that cop comes in. She starts taking our details and what have you. And they tell us to turn the cameras off. And we're just like, yeah, all right, no worries. You know, you're trying to help us or whatever. But luckily, we did have a camera going. My friend Will was arguing with one of the cops or whatever, and one of the other guys comes up and just starts being a real asshole to them, like one of the guys in the uniform, and starts shoving him and then shoving me, you know? Like, we just got assaulted by a random bystander, and then the cops come up and start assaulting us in order to help. Do you understand? You know?
Yeah, that's not a good experience.
They got no fucking humanity, bro. And I think it's bred or trained out of them more to the thing. You know, I remember I don't know about what it is about some people that enter into the police force are still good people and then they wind up leaving the police force. And some people who go in who are really bad people, they stay there and they keep getting promoted until eventually they've got a hell of a lot of power and they can do fucking anything to you. And guess who you have to complain to if a cop assaults you for no fucking reason? You have to complain to the cops who protect their own, like a gang. And no complaint ever happens.
Yeah, they run the things, you know. I mean, I've had experiences both good and bad, Vinny, you know, and I've had several run-ins, you know, growing up with the law here in California. I was kind of I grew up really on the other side of the tracks, and, you know, I've had the good and the bad experiences with them lying, and then I've had them completely cool to me and let me go in several situations and so forth. And, you know, the humanity, I see it a lot. It seems like if they can control you the way the system is, you know, you say you love it and you love the conveniences of it. And of course you don't like the stuff that you don't like, you're exposing, you know, which I agree with, you know, you have to, because to educate other people out there, but we're able to understand these poisons and everything. Why are they telling us that they're doing this to us? And why are we able to educate other people out there? Are they like watching us and just going, okay, these guys are, allowed to do this? Are they eventually just going to frickin' gather us up? They're fucking, they got Vinny Eastwood and they're getting everybody's IP address and everything. And then eventually we're going into FEMA camps. Or is this like we're allowed to be awoken and to avoid these poisons and to educate people? What the fuck's going on?
Best way to control the opposition is to lead it. That's what Lenin said. And I think that there is an element of that in the truth movement, that people are actually working for the other side, waking people up, but not waking them up to everything, just a few things, and keeping them in the fear paradigm.
That'd be Alex Jones, of course.
Now, yeah, whether or not he's actually working for the other side, I think is a bit of a stretch. I haven't seen really evidence to connote that, and I do understand, of course, that actually, without him, there wouldn't even really be a modern truth movement. You know, he's number one, he's head honcho.
Yeah, a ton of truths he exposes, definitely, I agree.
Yeah, exactly. So even if he was working for the other side is a fucking bad move in that case. You know, they've shot themselves in the foot, they've created a monster, and now the monster's turning on them like in Frankenstein. That's a difficult case. But I'm not 100% sure on that because I've not seen the evidence. I've seen what happened to you with, you know, writing the second article and then all of a sudden people turning up outside your door and stuff like that has happened to numerous people that I've spoken to off the air having really bad, bitter experiences with them. One was a guest, a high-level Freemason whistleblower who was put on hold during the live broadcast for 3 hours. When he was supposed to be coming on to expose the massive corruption within the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry of the 33rd Degree of Supreme Council. Okay?
Gotcha.
So, you know, it's not isolated incidents.
That wasn't James Robert, right? That was someone else?
No, that was.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Do you think it was just too big of a platform?
I don't know. You know, I mean, it's weird. Here's the thing. I do a radio show every day, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that happened behind the scenes that my listeners just aren't in. You know, I'm sure yourself, you don't explain everything, like all the technical aspects about everything that you do, every decision you make, every guest you have and how you got them and all of that. You don't. It's just a radio show. You know, you do this, that and the other, blah, 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 blah. That's all that everybody sees. What you do behind the scenes, on the other hand, is really what matters in a lot of ways. My former producer, Mitch, had a saying. It says, how you do anything is how you do everything. And if you're ever like going out on a date with somebody and they're treating the waiter badly or whatever, you can understand that if you ever get hitched with them, that's how they're going to start treating you. And all the background stories about truth is all over the place. And I mean, frack, the infighting is everywhere and it's so massive in its scope. And there really is a lot of evidence to say that a lot of truthers are actually fucking bad people. Like they actually are cruel, egotistical, paranoid, egomaniacal, you know, it's just the fact is, okay, you get out of the normal slave movement and you get into the truth movement and you think that everybody's going to exude completely different temperaments, that they're all going to be nice, open, honest, caring, loving, intelligent individuals. And the fact of the matter is that's not the case at all. The truth movement, just like every other movement, just like all the rest, is just a cross-section of society full of psychos and scumbags, along with all the good, caring, loving, and decent people.
And just like in any movement, correct?
Yeah, precisely. So I don't think it's necessarily I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this, honestly, because fuck. It's a big complicated situation. Who cares? Yeah. Who cares? Point is, we're here, we're exposing scumbaggery, and we're having a wee bit of fun. What the fuck's wrong with that? I'm not going to care about what anybody else is doing, because like I said, whenever anybody's, you know, abusing me on Facebook, YouTube comments or something like that, block! And I never hear the motherfucker again.
Yeah, no, we've had our comments back and forth. It was a while back. I want to get into that, but I don't want to lose my train of thought on the truth movement and you know, people like Alex Jones and everything he exposes. And I know you don't want to get into it, and you don't want to get into any of the infighting, because like you said, there's a lot of fucking infighting in the truth movement, and that's the last thing you want to do. There's enough things.
I'll go wherever the wind blows.
Yeah.
Because it's your show. You'll suffer the adverse consequences.
No, my thing is, you know, as far as like Alex Jones goes, I believe anybody that gets to a certain level, they're controlled to a certain level. I don't know by who, you know, whether it be some secret Freemasonry or it's just the corporations and that how it works. I don't know. But, you know, I think, you know, Alex Jones is somewhat controlled somewhere, you know, and I don't know how it works, who he's controlled by. Do I think you are in no way? You know, but if you were to get huge, like say Alex Jones or Glenn Beck, I would question it. But if you were, what I'm seeing is just, it's like nothing's taboo almost to a certain extent. I know there's certain subjects that, you know, Alex Jones doesn't want to talk about. What you said is nothing. There's some certain people, you know, I don't really watch that there are certain subjects, but everything's being discussed. And it's like they're allowing this truth to go out there and everybody to get educated and the knowledge. And it's like nothing is almost taboo. It's like they've stretched the limit and it's like getting larger and larger and larger, you know. I think it's fucking cool to a certain extent. It's like the first time in history where I could be talking to you in New Zealand about all the same fucking shit that's happening there is happening here in America. And like you said, you're more educated than probably 99% of Americans here. And I know it's kind of vice versa, but there in New Zealand, there's not really a market as far as, you know, making a living, because we all have to make a living with what we're doing. My thing with my truth movement was mortgages, and I did that about 6 years ago, you know, and it's a website called LoanSafe, and it's a forum, and I help people through foreclosure, and, you know, that's a massive crisis here, right? So I started a website back then, and it does really well, and it afforded me to do this new project that I've been sitting on the sidelines for like 2 years, watching guys such as yourself, you know, to motivate me. And, you know, Alex Jones was one of the guys that I had watched as well, you know, with all of the things that he has in the news and the things that he's exposing, and fluoridated water, you know, shit like that. I didn't know it was him that, you know, told me about it, and all the other things. And he's constantly going after, you know, the President Obama, where, you know, in the past, you did that kind of shit, your head was cut off. I mean, you know that, right, Vinny?
Well, not
to a certain extent. I mean, a couple hundred years ago, you know, when you talk about the king, you couldn't do that. There wasn't really, you know, based on the research that I've done,
Can I ask?
Sure.
We're allowed to say and do these things, right? Okay, and we appear to suffer not quite so much consequences just in general. Like some people get picked on, like maybe you or other people, but the vast majority of people who talk about this stuff just kind of get away with it. It's like, well, they're not committing any crimes. I just wonder whether or not they even believe that we're even capable of overthrowing the New World Order. You know, maybe that's the interesting part of it, is that us talking like this and the people listening, just because you're listening and just because we're talking doesn't mean we're actually accomplishing anything. We might just be spinning our wheels into oblivion, playing into the New World Order's hands. And you've got to think like that. You've got to think, man, am I doing the right thing? What am I actually achieving? What am I actually accomplishing?
You think like this, right, Vinny? Come on, we all do, right?
Yeah. Gotcha. And see, I've got a massive catalog of stuff. Like, what have I got here? 1,000-odd video, maybe nearly 2,000 videos, and 1.4 million video views, 6,300 subscribers. Not overly influential at the best of times, right? So, am I worth the attention that they're giving me? They're not giving me any attention. I've had no black SUVs. I've had no scary calls from the cops or council or anything like that. I have basically experienced zero consequences.
You haven't met with Satan with a check, offering you a check for your soul?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Not even a nothing, nothing.
No letters, no phone calls. I feel neglected. You know? I miss the feeling of being wrongfully handcuffed. You know, what's a guy got to do to get arrested for speaking the truth these days, man?
Why do you think they allow this, though? I think this was ever.
They can't stop it. It's like the frog in the boiling pot, you know, to suddenly round up all the truthers, radio show hosts and stuff like that. All of our audiences was like every single time I even take a week off, even when I put it on my website, I'm taking a week off. I still have people emailing and calling, Vinny, what happened to you? Did the New World Order get you? You know, you're like, we're all so overly anxious and that there's some big evil conspiracy that's going to envelop everybody, and every single truther talk radio show host, as soon as he goes off the air, the instant assumption is, oh my god, they got him, they fucking got him, you know. Just you know, look, they can't control all of us. They can't come as it, because, like I said, frog in the boiling pot. Then everybody in the whole world would suddenly know that we're in hot water, and it would turn into a massive resistance. We'd become martyred, right? I think that's the reason. I think they're quite happy with their massive quantities of surveillance, so that when the timing is right, when freedom has become just this big, they'll be able to take all of us into a FEMA camp and nobody will fucking notice.
That's your conspiracy theory, Vinnie Eastwood, right there.
Well, I think that's the only methodology that would work, really. You can't take a whole bunch of active people who have active listenerships and take them out and expect no reaction. The New World Order does not want revolution. They do not want violent resistance. They're Fabian socialists. They want to move very, 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 very slowly towards their New World Order, and then bam, final hammer throw.
Yeah, here's what my theory is that they're going to continue this. It's the frogs in the pot. They're boiling us kind of things. They're, you know, we have all these different things that are hitting us with, and it seems like it's getting more and more. We find out more and more every day, and, you know, from the GMO to the vaccinations to the chemtrails, which we can't avoid, which we really don't even know what it is, right? I mean, we do, but we don't. We don't know what the fuck they're doing to us. And I think it's it has to do with population control, of course, and that there's too many people on the planet, and they kind of built up this pyramid where, like, you know, we're in Egypt. Say we're the slaves in Egypt in the old days, and we're building the pyramids, and we get to the fucking top, right? And they got to feed the slaves and everything and take care of them and everything, but still they don't treat them that great. But the pyramid's done. It's the last one, and they got about, you know, a million slaves left, and they got to feed them, but all the work's done. You know, hey, the shit's done. You know, we really don't need these guys. These guys are just workers. They got their warriors. They got the system. I almost look at, you know, that is where we are now in Egypt, is that pyramid is built. You know, the systems, the controls are pretty much in where they have it pretty much put, and they're slowly boiling us in that kind of pot, where these little poisons, if you don't know them, they're going to kill you, and they're going to kill you rather quickly, from the food to the, you know, the cigarettes. And I think it's the combination. When you do it all, you cut 20, 30, 40 years off your life. And I think that there's some things in there that are inoculating people so they don't have children. And that's kind of the goal, is to bring down the population that way. And it's not really going to be, it might be some type of revolution or something, but like you said, they're Fabian socialists, is what you believe.
Yeah. Well, they do that methodology.
It's a the scientific dictatorship is basically what you're saying.
Well, it's part technocracy with the scientific dictatorship. So that, and all of that, and it's part psychology, and it's part socialism. All right. So, on the one hand, they're using technology. On the other hand, they're using their understanding of the human mind. And on the other hand, they're trying to move very, very slowly in a particular direction so people don't suddenly wake up and go, oh, my God, there's something really bad going on here. Because understand, had we never listened to Alex Jones, had we never seen all of these truth movement stuff that is all on the thing, we'd have no fucking idea. And anybody who's talking about this stuff would just call them crazy. And that's how the system's working. Beautifully. I mean, I must have been called a conspiracy theorist. I'm Team Top. Go ahead.
No, of course. No, I agree. Where I was getting at is that everybody gets turned on to this, but there's a lot of people that see what's going on. And I'm sure you've talked to, you know, thousands and maybe millions of people that might have seen you talk about the truth or what's going on, and they just go, oh, okay, or and they go on to their own thing. So there's lots of people that could either give a fuck about what's going on, or they just believe it's bullshit conspiracy, and we're the nuts, we're the fruity cakes with the tinfoil hats, we just don't wear them, right? So there's those people out there, and, you know, a lot of them I see taking these poisons, and, you know, everything that we talk about, they're getting hit from left and right. You know, we might enjoy a cigarette here and there and a beer or whatever, but a lot of these people are taking all these poisons in, and I see people dying actually at a young age. And in the truth movement, there's a lot of people that are into this, but they're being overtaken by the fear, you know, and I know that is very bad for your health. You know, when you have fear constantly in your the negativity, it's really bad for your health. And I know that weighs into the powers that be. Do you agree?
I don't understand the question.
So basically that the fear, and the we're talking about this stuff all the time, but people in this movement, they get drowned by the fear, and they just focus on it, and it
focuses, and that in itself kills them and deactivates them, right?
Yeah. So you have, okay, the people that aren't in the truth movement that are getting hit by the poisons, right? And then you have the people in the truth movement that might not be, you know, being affected by the fluoridated water or the GMO foods or the fucking
gluten. So basically,
gluten or this.
Either the poisons get you or the fear of the poisons get you.
Motherfucker! You got it!
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying is a lot of people in this movement definitely are getting overtaken by that. Do you agree at all?
See, I'm in the movement and I'm letting the poisons get me, but I'm casting out the fear.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm...
it's kind of reverse psychology, right?
Yeah. Or reverse psychopathy. The other methodology that I think is very important to people is being able to bring lightheartedness and fun to these terrible and scary situations. I'm kind of modeling it and being part of my personality because I've been through awful loads of shit in my life. You know, I got bullied in high school, been fat all my life. I've been fired from jobs where I was like the number one employee because the boss was either jealous or thought I was a threat to the company. I've had people steal stuff out of my house that were actually living there right underneath my nose. I've had people screw me over six ways from Sunday, from left to right, north, south, east, and west. Okay, you know, really nasty experience being alive on this planet. And that gives me somewhat of a perspective on just how bad things really are and what you're actually supposed to be afraid of, what you're actually supposed to really care about. And it occurs to me that most people don't have that. They don't know what to prioritize, what to put up there, what to make sure dominates their life. Do you want your life to be dominated by working for some other sociopathic criminal scumbaggery element and for minimum wage while you go home and you live in your slave block apartment and you drink the fluoridated water and the badly homogenized milk and the cornflakes that are GMOs and with iron filings and stuff like that in them for breakfast? No? Okay. Well, it looks like you're going to have to quit your motherfucking job, yo. And you're going to have to go to work against the New World Order. Because I like this this analogy of waking up, okay? Wake up. Okay, what do you do? Let's take the energy and take it literally. You're in bed, you're asleep, and then you wake up. Ah, it's a beautiful day. There's only one – oh, fuck, there's a chemtrail. And then you get out and you think to yourself, what do you do after you wake up? You get out of bed, don't you? Right? And then normally after you get out of bed, then you'll have a shower. Okay, so you got to wash yourself off. Then after you shower, you've got to somehow fuel yourself for the day ahead. You know, you've got to drink your coffee and you've got to have your toast or whatever. And then after you've fueled yourself for the day ahead, then you go out and you go to work, being stuck in various traffic and such like this. And this analogy goes full circle, doesn't it? You know, I've woken up to the New World Order and I stopped the fear paralyzing me. I got out of bed, washed myself of all of the shit that I'd been believing my entire existence thus far. I fuel myself on copious quantities of coffee. So that I can have the energy to get up every single morning and rant and rave and interview and laugh and have powerful while I am working every day against the New World Order. And then when I come home at the end of the day, what do you do normally? You sit down, you veg out in front of the TV, you have a beer, maybe you have another shower or whatever, and then you go to sleep to start the whole process over again. It's not entirely dissimilar from what I do. It's just my travel time is zero because I only have to come into my office. My exposure to the daily life of being frustrated at being stuck in traffic is zero. My ability to be hounded by bosses and stupid other employees who don't know fucking shit about anything and telling me what to do when they know less about anything than I do is zero. I have almost detached entirely from the slave mentality. The fear doesn't really exist for me anymore. Fear is simply anger without motivation. Okay? It's like depression, you know? I've been depressed before, mostly because of financial something. It's like, oh my God, I got no money. That feels really stressful. That feels really bad. And you don't feel very good, and you want to quit everything, and you don't want to do your job anymore, and your missus suddenly looks a lot less attractive to you, and your whole life is fucked up just because you're out of money, right? And it's just amazing. Just with that one control mechanism still implanted in my life, I can't get out of that paradigm entirely. However, was it? So if I'm going to build a methodology for my life, and ultimately I want to have the largest media entity in the Southern Hemisphere under my belt, okay? That's what I'm starting to create. I want to create new platforms. So what I'm doing nowadays with doing a radio show and filming it and also editing it and uploading it every day, very few people actually do that, let alone 5 days a week for 2 hours a day. So I'm starting to actually do something that people have never done before. I've gotten more Kiwi activists on air than anybody else in human history.
Just so you know, Vinny, I've been doing, like, I did 4 shows last week just for an hour, and it was just like I killed myself on top of what I was already doing. You know, and I kind of did the same format as you. You get them, you know, you do the show, you do the audio, you have the download link, and then you have the YouTube video, which you do of it. Of course, you distribute on there, and then takes a lot of time. And then you have to have storage. I know American Freedom, of course, help you with all the audio storage of all the links and everything?
No, they don't help me at all. I mean, they put up their own archives, and I put up my own archives. My archives are about 64K quality per second, and theirs is 32. So I put up a little bit more higher quality audio archives for my listeners, and I cut off one of the ad breaks at the very end, and that's about it. Plus there's commercial-free versions of it that I do, and I also take the best segment from the show and the day, and then I cut that out and then have it as a separate clip. So when you're looking at the American Freedom Radio archives, there's just one link. Okay, that's the thing and the description that I write out on my website. Then you go to my website, there is a picture of the guest, a title to the show for the day, with a, you know, and a description, a full version of the show, 2 separate hours, like hour one and hour two, for those who can only venture in a 1 hour time, and a shorter version of the show as a clip, plus ad-free versions of that on a different page. So I'm creating a lot of excess content, and I think I'm not sure exactly how this is going to play out. Like, I look at my archive section and all of the people that I'm getting on video, the picture that I put up on my archive section of them is usually them laughing at some point. So, you know, you'll scroll down, all these people have been surveilled by the cops and had their kids stolen or had their careers destroyed, and they're all like
why? I know why, and it makes me laugh when you start talking about it just for some reason. It's just I've noticed that as well. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of people that normally don't laugh, and there's some serious subjects, you usually get them to laugh when you're interviewing them, definitely.
Yeah, on occasions, you know, sometimes just lost their sense of humor about it, eh? And that's okay. That's okay. You know, if they want to be serious, sure, they can be serious. If they want to be fruity, they can be fruity. I don't really care. The main point of my show is just to basically sit there and just record them and have actually something to fucking show for it. Because I don't know about you, but I've had many, 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 many conversations with people that were never recorded that I wish had been, and all the best things that that happen usually happen when the camera's off. And so if you always, 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 every single gosh dang day, recording, uploading, editing, that kind of thing, producing more and more content, it actually produces a cumulative effect. Because, you know, you can search for any famous name in the truth movement, and the chances are I've probably already interviewed them.
I agree, Vinny. How many people have you interviewed by now? Do you know?
No idea.
See, no ego there. That's cool, bro. I like that. You know, because it's just like you're so busy working and doing the, you don't even have time to do that. You know, you don't have to feed your ego with that. But I assume 1,000 now, maybe?
3 years average.
Okay, 3 years now? Okay. So probably like 500 or so, maybe.
Let's think about this. So from 2010 through 2013, starting on June 26, 2010, on average, maybe 1 to 2 guests a day. Let's say 7 guests a week. And I take off about maybe a month a year. So that's 7 times 48 times 3. Let's do a quick calculation here. 7 times 48 times 3 equals... Oh, wait. It's taking a wee while to load here. It's a lot. It's a lot. Oh, wait. Here we are. I think I got it. 48 times 7 times 3. 1,008. So, yeah.
About 1,000. So I was about right.
Round about right, yeah. Yeah. And there was also, I go on a lot of other people's shows, and I've got a separate page on my website for Vinny on other shows. Gotcha. And I did count those a while back. I think it was about 100 and about 110, maybe about 120 now.
With all you're doing, Vinny, you know, all that content, American Freedom Radio, all these viewers, these subscribers and everything, you're driving a Ferrari and your house is on the beach in New Zealand, right? Auckland there?
Yeah. Actually, if you were to see a picture of my car, it's fucking terrible. It's my grandmother's car, and it's rusting out from the front. It's got big scrapes along the bumper. The left indicator is held together by blue tack, sticky tape. I wanted to do duct tape because it's a lot more fashionable, but the roof is rusting underneath a black kind of wash that we've put over it. My friend Dave down the mechanics, he did that for me for free. It's just, I've got a massive rust stain on the side of my car door. I've got InfoWars stickers, ironically, on my car, front and back, because it's just the best place to go to wake people up, really.
Yeah.
And what I got on there? Yeah, my wiper blades are so rusty. It's I can't believe that they haven't snapped in half. You know, and you just like turn the wiper blades on. You know, they're that rusty. I can't believe that hasn't happened yet. My place,
American Freedom Radio. You don't make any money at all from them.
They give me ads, and I sell Blue Shield electromagnetic frequency protection devices off of that website. But very, very rarely do we get sales through there. You know, once in a blue moon, a whole bunch of sales will come in, and then there's an extra few $100 in my hand and what have you. But the rest of the time, all the money's really coming in from listeners, and if I need something, I get it.
Yeah, you had mentioned that, no, Vinny. I wanted the way I know you guys don't make that much money. You know, I'm really familiar with the web because I've been in this business now for 6 years, and I make money on my other website, LoanSafe, which enables me to do this. You know, because it's hard to do this and not make money. You know, and I know from watching you for a long time and then also being your friend on Facebook, which, you know, I think you're up to 5,000 people now, and you were cool enough to do that a while ago. I got in there. It's cool to kind of see sometimes when you go up and down, you know, you talk about shows and you talk about sometimes your feelings and stuff like that. And I could tell that there's not a lot of money in this business, you know, and if you're not Alex Jones and you have that polished machine, there's not much money in it. And you're married?
Not yet.
Okay.
And we're kind of we're both kind of iffy about the whole marriage situation.
And I'm sure it's money, right?
Huh?
Is it money? Is that why?
Well, I don't know.
Is that a stress in your life?
Yeah, money is definitely a stress in my, particularly on, you talked to me about a month and a half ago. You talked to me about money. I'm like, nah, it's sweet, bro. You know, we're getting plenty of donations and subscribers. And then PayPal strikes. And they say, hey, you've been collecting donations. Hey, you've been collecting subscriptions. You have to now prove that you're a charitable organization, or we're going to freeze your account. So they froze my account. And everybody who's been donating to me $1, $5, $10, or $20 a month that I've been getting to do that to me since 2010 when I started, gone. And I can't access that account for another 180 days.
Wow.
And I had to plead with my listeners to rearrange, like cancel their old subscriptions to the old PayPal account and then come into the new PayPal account. Or, and if you can't do that, then please and preferably go to the homepage of the Eastwood Show. There's my bank account number on there with a name and all of that kind of stuff. And if we can figure out how to do automatic payments into that, brilliant. And very few people have resubscribed by comparison to how much they were. You know, I used to have enough spare money to pay every bill that I had, including fixing my car when it needed be, including when my girlfriend's car, its engine blew up. The listeners donated like $1,000 in 24 hours. And that was from two people who donated $500 each.
How cool.
And this kind of generosity that I experience from people, it breaks my heart, man. It really does. Like last night, I actually burst into tears because a friend of mine, Paul Carruthers, who's been on my show, said he wanted to donate me, and he gave me $100. And I looked at my account, and it has exactly enough money in it to pay my rent this week, and I just fucking burst into tears because I had no idea that somebody really would do that for me. And it obligates me, knowing that people support me this much, to do even more. Okay, so even though PayPal took away all my subscribers and that I'm now on the bones of my ass, I have actually upped my game anyway. Behind this computer, like you may be seeing me on the webcam, but behind the webcam, there's another HD camera on a tripod that is recording us, and there's a little recording device here on the microphone attached to it, another microphone, so that I can lift the audio from this webcam, lay it over the video from the HD camera, and then upload the video with synced audio in HD. And I started doing that. It's a lot more work. It's taken me times as long to do my videos, but I started doing that because every single time a measure of generosity comes at me from my listeners, again, it obligates me to do more. How can I improve my show for the listeners? How can I improve the quality? How can I improve the guests? How can I improve my ranting? How can I give something back to those people who are so very, very generous to me? And it occurs to me that there's no possibility I would ever be able to repay anything, you know? Like, I work every day, give people coverage when they ordinarily wouldn't get any at all in a lot of cases. And that is my work. And my listeners are the ones who pay me for my work. Therefore, my listeners are my employer. And when your employer tells you to do something, you do it. So when my listeners ask me to interview somebody, I fucking do it. Look, I think the problem with the world is that people don't get rewarded for doing the right thing. And they've gotten themselves into a habit of assuming that they have to do a bad thing in order to get rewarded. What I like to do in my life is I like to make all those lies and all those bad things real. I like to make them true. And in a lot of ways, I'm a pioneer in this industry because I went out right away knowing that there's nobody else in New Zealand doing this kind of thing and knowing that there's really going to be no audience in New Zealand in order to get enough income from them in order to do this. Conveniently, I also have access to an international audience through AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the internet. Collectively, throughout the entire world, all of these very individual people, you know, I got a donation in today from somebody in Berlin, people in and South Africa, and America and Bolivia and what have you. I've got listeners all over the world.
That's amazing. So someone in Berlin, they can't get into your PayPal, but they're willing to go and wire that into your Kiwi bank account. That is so fucking cool.
That's what I said.
You know, Vinny, you know why? Because a lot of people, you're touching a lot of people with your heart, and people see that, Vinny. You know, that's one of the – you were the first person, I think the second person, you know, that I emailed to interview, because I look up to you as an inspiration in this movement. You know, my subject matter is a little bit different, you know, on my blog, what I talk about. But I want to talk about everything, you know, but you're an inspiration to a lot of people out there. You know, you make people laugh. You have a heart. There's not a subject that you talk about that's taboo. You're just real, you know, and it comes across, and it's just cool. Just keep doing what you're doing. And I think it's going to hopefully get better for people out there, for yourself. Like, you know, your website. Do you have anybody helping you with your website at all? Here's my offer to you. I have a web company that I own. If you're looking for any kind of redesign or anything, we'll do it for free. I have hosting. I could host it for free. I have my own server, professional hosting service. You know, I pay $500 a month. I could easily put your website up on there. Audio files are a little bit different. You know, I could talk to you about that, you know, how storage is for that. But I'd be happy to help you in any way I can, just to get back to you of what you give to me and everybody else out there. So your website, I could help out. I have a lot of good ideas that I can give you to help you increase your income as well. I think you're a powerhouse media company, you know, and is American Freedom Radio, are you going to continue with them forever? Is it a great relationship? Are you happy?
Let me put it this way. Most of my employment career, I've been talked to by my quite a number of times, you know, been telling me what to do, telling me what not to do. Since I started at American Freedom Radio 3 years ago, I've had in total maybe half a dozen conversations with the owner of the network.
And great exposure over there?
Yeah. I mean, also because you can – here's my methodology. See, I'm actually an expert at being lazy, okay, and making it look like you're doing a shitload, okay?
Uh-huh.
So dig this. How did you contact me for an interview?
I think the first time was Facebook, and then I hit you up like 3 weeks later on Skype. And then you finally, like 3 weeks later, you got back to me on Skype.
Okay. There you go. So you got the two things. And then in terms of organizing, I just said, okay, this particular time, boom, we're doing it, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I was just like, you know, this. I said, when can you do it? And you said, this was the day and the time. I said, okay, let's do it.
So, exactly. Now, when I see other people doing their organizing and stuff like that, they're always kind of like apprehensive a bit. And they just say, oh, well, what time would work best for you? And so what you're doing is you're taking the pressure and you're putting it on to them to come up with it, to come up with a creative solution and whatnot. For me, it works very well because I have a set time frame and I'm just kind of no nonsense. It's like, this is free. Let's do it then. Okay, cool. That cool with you. Sweet as done. And in terms of interviewing guests that I've never even seen before or whatever, I've got an automatic interview request form. So I'll send that email out and it says, I'm Vinny Eastwood, la la la. I'm on 26 AM FM stations with a link to the affiliates page. And I want to give you coverage on an international level. And I try to wake up people to the New World Order system with a little bit of humor. Happy to donate some of your valuable time. I'd really appreciate giving you some of the time on the air. And invariably, when somebody's got a major network behind them and they send you that, and all of those questions that you normally ask, who is this person? How many stations have they got? Where is the thing? It's all in that email. And came up with that methodology over about maybe 6 months in the start off. And then when they reply, they either say yes or a no. Like basically, it's just a one-word answer for me because showtime is set. There's no changes. I can't really put them outside of the show. And so I have an automatic interview confirmation one as well, which tells them the schedule, exactly what hour they're on, how many segments there are, the style of the show, like we're in a cafe talking, the Skype names and numbers and all of these other sort of backup things. These are all the questions that normally come up, that normally soak up time, you know, because you're typing out and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I know. It's okay. You got it down to a science now. Gotcha.
Got it down to a science. So I get a massive guest, two emails that take me maybe 60 to 90 seconds tops. Okay? They say yes, I put them down in my calendar, send them the email back telling them what time that is in the calendar. And they'll either email me back saying, no, that doesn't work, and I'll move them around, or they don't email me back, which means they've accepted, and then I'll email them closer to the time, just reminding them that they're on. And so, boom, you know, I'm getting organizing, producing, done with zero effort virtually. Okay, and other people, they need a producer, like a full-time.
Yeah, they have actually a whole staff doing all this shit.
A whole staff doing that. And I figured out how to do it with just a couple of email templates. So it looks like I'm doing a shitload of work, but it doesn't take any time. Same with the audio archiving. Okay, you know, develop a methodology because you've got to do all these cuts. So when I start recording my show, before I go on air, there'll be the previous ad break from American Freedom Radio that I'm recording on a computer in the other room. So I'll record that that first ad break, and then I've got like 4 minutes till I air, and then I'm sitting here, I'm recording it on my webcam, I'm recording it with a camera behind me, and then directly after the show, boom, up comes the garage band, boom, I grab the USB stick, grab the audio file out of the other computer in the other room, start it in processing, boom, open up the iMovie, start importing all the footage into it, give it 5-10 minutes or something till that's all done, and then boom, you start that, cut that first ad break out, slide it back. Then you slide the end of the thing back, and then, damn, that's your first archive. It takes 30 seconds, okay? And then you've got to do the hour one version. So that's just a thing with the slider. Shugunk, back to the first hour, boom, done. And then you cut that there. Then you slide the second hour back, boom, that's your second hour. And then you pick a great segment out of those. Well, you know, you just press Control-Z to undelete those things that you just deleted. And then, boom, you got your little audio segment. And I know.
Yeah, I noticed you've been doing that a lot. That's cool.
And I know exactly where all the ad breaks are as well, the exact time. At exactly.
Are you writing down
minutes.
The time when they're?
Oh, no, I'm memorized.
Okay, sorry.
Memorized. Sorry. When you get to 18 minutes of the show, boom, there's a break, and then it comes back at 22, 25 seconds. Boom, cut there. Then it goes up to 39 minutes. Cut there. Goes up to 43.25 seconds. Boom, cut there. Got up to 55 minutes and 45 seconds. And that's the whole thing per hour. Bam, 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 bam. Cut out all those ads. Slide them all together. Then you got an ad-free archive. Whoosh. Get that out there, and then slide the slider back, do the first hour of the ad-free archives, and then delete those first three, and then zoop, slide it back, and you've got your second hour. And that's the audio archives. In the video archives, I've got all the videos in there. I've got my webcam here, and I've got my tripod cam here. And so then I have a look at the webcam version. Okay, how can I reduce my time editing this? Well, as soon as I come back from break, because I'm not allowed to have any music in my show on YouTube, it means every single time when I come back from break, and if you listen to me intently, you'll notice this, I always say, welcome back. And I pause for a couple of seconds, and the music goes out. And then I go, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood show. Just before I say that, welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood show, the second time, that's when I stop my recorder and start it again so that it has an instant capture of exactly when I'm starting to talk so that there's no music, no extra editing needing to be done there to cut the music out for me. And I'm talking over it so I don't breach any copyright violations with that. So you put the archive in, and you grab the audio from this webcam version, you put that over the top, and then it syncs. And you've got it perfect. And then you just do that half a dozen times. Got like automatic titles that I put on them. Paste, copy the pictures in of the person, just drag it across one picture for a whole 2-hour show. Boom, done, sorted. And then there I have it. I've created audio archives and video archives in less than an hour of real actual work.
Wow. You got this down to a science, you know, and I'll offer you free web help as far as designing anything that you want done. If you have any ideas, we could do it for you. I'll show you some examples of what we've done. And again, this is just out of my heart to you. I have a gal that actually works in Romania that works for my website, loansafe.org, that does really well. And she, you know, she charges me X amount of dollars per hour for whatever work I need to be done. and it won't cost you anything, and I'll donate that to you instead of money. I'd rather do that because I have some ideas for you. How come you don't have any other ads on your website like Google AdSense ads or anything? Have you tried that at all?
I did try it, but I didn't really get a whole lot of returns from it. And then I was starting to think to myself, you know what? I don't actually need advertisers. I've got my listeners. My listeners are always supporting me. And what was ironic is that when I did have many ads up there and many products, I would barely get anything from that, but I'd still continue to get more donations and more subscriptions because people actually just really care about me and want to see me continue. And they'd rather donate something to me and really get nothing specific back other than just what everybody can get for free than they would purchasing something for themselves.
Knowledge is power. I mean, it's the most, I think, the most prized commodity, and you give it away pretty much freely. You know, all your work, you're distributing, you know, you have your subscription service. You basically, it's what, a donation anybody wants from $5, or it's actually a dollar now.
Yeah, from between $1 to $100 a month, anything in between. I have one person who donates me $50 a month.
Wow. That's incredible, and that's tied up for another how many days now? With PayPal?
No. We've solved that PayPal problem, and this person who's donated me $50 a month goes directly into my KiwiBank account.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and see, that was part of the other reason why I kind of broke down last night is because not only did my friend Paul Carruthers give me $100, but this other person, I noticed that it was an automatic payment for $50 a month.
Wow.
Who the fuck does that other than a really, really awesome person who I'm just honored that they would actually care about me and like my content that much that they'd be willing to give such a massive cut of what they earn every single month? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's quite a humbling experience.
No, to me, you're like a preacher, you know, and you're preaching the truth. You know, and those are tithes. Those are the tithings from your church members, you know, and the congregation. And here you are all around the fucking world, Vinny, you know, talking to everybody. And it's amazing. And you, all those millions of views and all your subscribers and everything. And I know that you live a humble existence. You know, it's not like you're, you know, living the fat life and you drive this great car and for all the work that you do. And I know you have it down to a science, but I know it's still hard work and I know it's still freaking stressful. And it gets, you know, all this truth and all these hard topics that you talk about get to you sometimes, but you know, it's not all about the money to you, you know, and we could see that out here. You know, I've been watching you for, I think, a year and a half now when I first discovered you. And, you know, I say I don't watch any show. I watch at least a couple shows a week. You know, there's always somebody that interests me, and it's not every show. And I think you understand that with a lot of us out here. You know, and my intentions were to offer my help as far as our business goes to you instead of doing the donation. And actually, that almost be like a continued thing if you want to take it, you know, as far as we'll offer that website work anytime you need it. And then the hosting for your website. If you pay anything, you won't have to pay that anymore. So you could think of that as somewhat of a donation. And then also, I'm an expert at like and I know it's not about money to you, but I think there's a couple things that you can do
actually,
to help you out. And I don't want to
actually, it kind of really is about the money to me. No. Let me qualify that.
Sure.
Because when that PayPal thing went down and I suddenly realized my income was gone, it depressed me so much that I honestly thought about stopping doing the radio show. Like, really. It's just like, no income, no nothing. But then I realized, what the fuck else can I do? Go out, door-to-door salesman with a clipboard? Fuck that. There's no fucking way. I can't work for anybody anymore. And this is actually kind of trapped here, right? I'm serious.
I hear you. No.
I'm employophobic. I have a deep, unrealistic fear of being employed by somebody. All right? Somebody says, Vinny, do you want a job? All of a sudden, I'm like, ooh, biting my fingernails and having a panic attack and having to do breathing exercises and stuff like that. Cannot be employed. I'm actually really because of the things that have happened to me in my life, I've started to recognize, at least within the last couple of days, how much of a real kind of like a broken man I am. And what occurs to me is that despite the fact that I'm damaged goods, I know that I'm not the only truther who's damaged goods, who's had bad stuff happen to them, who has little nervous tics or stuff like that. And I just have to keep doing what I'm doing because I don't feel that I have a choice. You know, if I stop doing what I'm doing, what New Zealand voice are people going to hear every day? If not for me, there's nothing. And there's so many activists in this country who would never be on YouTube or on the internet at all if not for me, because they're really humble people who don't like to self-promote, whereas I'm very much the opposite of that. I self-promote like there's no tomorrow. I'm kind of like, you know that term prestitute?
No, no.
A prostitute that is the press, you know?
Gotcha.
And you've heard of Dan Dix and Press for Truth in Canada?
Yeah.
Yeah. I consider myself a prostitute for truth.
Gotcha.
So I will prostitize myself and my radio program, any guest and any topic that comes off, and say, you're fabulous and you're great, even though I don't know who you are. Come on the show and we're going to talk about great stuff and we're going to have a fun time. We're going to get it out there for the listeners, and if they think that you're interesting, we're going to give out your website and stuff like that and hopefully gain you a little bit more support for this work that you're doing. And it matters not who I'm interviewing at the day. Everybody gets the same treatment. I don't contradict people or try to expose them or anything like that. I really am quite kind of a soft touch, essentially. I don't like being angry with people, you know, and being on my show or whatever. Even people that I inherently, in a lot of cases, disagree with. Like, so I had a guy on the show about climate change activism and how we're going to save the planet from the evil corporations or that kind of stuff, just because a listener suggested it. And I let him say his piece, you know. That's just kind of what I do. And I don't, as I said before, don't really have much of a choice in the matter anymore. I'm in too deep, and in order to change what I'm doing now, even if I wasn't being paid, I'd find some way. I have the ability to pull money out of my ass, like seriously. Just girlfriend needed a new car, came up with $1,700 in 48 hours from the listeners. You know,
what do you think that is? Why is that happening? Is it the energy that you're putting out there, the positive energy, even though you're talking about some of the most negative, hardcore things in the planet, bar none? And then here you are laughing. I mean, again, it's the polish that you put on it. You put the humor into it, and then you have these people out there that see you. And there's a lot of people, there's some people doing what you're doing that aren't getting donations and aren't getting the same thing.
You know what
and
the again, difference is?
What?
They're not asking.
Gotcha.
They're not asking. They work real hard, and I've seen this happen to many people. Again, they're not like me. They're not into self-promoting gotcha. And prostitizing themselves because they're too honorable and too conservative for that. I don't suffer from those disabilities. I've got other disabilities, like I can't lie, even when lying would be really, really good for me at this particular moment. Like, is that your weed, sir? Well, yes it is, officer. Oh, you're coming with me. Fuck.
You just can't. You never could.
I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way. Like, even gang members approaching me and just like, what are you doing? And I'll tell them what I'm doing. I'm here to buy weed off a mate of mine. And they're like, oh yeah, well, we're the ones who sell around here. Like, this actually fucking happened. It was scary, man. And it was just like, didn't I just lie to that person? Damn my pathological honesty. And I think also it's because of the fact that I'm honest and honorable and have integrity and that kind of stuff, and I've built a reputation that people actually really appreciate the work that I do and the person who I am. And I think maybe this sort of need to be appreciated and listened to maybe stems back to the fact that I was the youngest in my family, out of five kids, and my father was barely ever around. And when he was around, it was fists and kicks. You know, I don't fucking hard life. Nobody ever listened to me. Nobody even cared what I was talking about. Even there was this one incident at high school when I was exploring. We were just having a conversation, just me and a couple of other kids sitting around a picnic table outside the common room, talking about racism and how different races expressed their racism towards other races. For example, Caucasians make jokes about other races. This is how we express our racism. And I was wondering how other races expressed their racism. You know, do Indians, if they're racist against white people, do they make jokes about us, or do they express it in a different way? Do they have an anger or a rage angle as opposed to a comedy angle to denigrate the other races? And there was a Maori girl there who said, "Okay, well, why don't you give us an example of a white racist joke or something?" And I said, "Okay, what do you call a Maori on a clothesline? A Maori go round." And just doing it deadpan, it's not meant to be funny. Okay, this is just using it as an example. She went to the assistant principal and got me suspended and told her that I had said all Maoris are bums and all. Okay? And I had said, no, I did not say that. And I explained to them the situation, and they didn't believe me. And you know what was even more interesting? And I'm not a very popular person at school, by the way. I went around to those other people at the table, and they'd all said that is exactly what I had said, because they didn't want me to be at school for a couple of days.
Jeez.
Kids can be fucking cruel, man.
Yeah, so... what do you think? Why are the powers that be know this? You've had your experiences with these people out there, and I want to let you know I have too. I've you know, had my trouble with the law, but I was never one of those guys that could hurt people. You know, I sold the marijuana, you know, and kind of just my own thing. I didn't think it was bad, but you know, when it's against the law, things could happen. People get robbed, all kinds of different things. Why where was I going with this? Right before the... I lost my train of thought there for a second. Sorry, Vinny.
It matters not. We roll with the punches, as it were.
Did you ever used to do that in the beginning?
What do you mean, lose my train of thought?
Well, yeah, here's the thing. When the radio show, because you're like, you're going, right? And you'll be talking. And as a show host, you want to ask kind of cool questions and kind of contribute. And you have this down to a science. It's pretty much, I know you don't barely even think about anything, but I'll think of something and then you'll keep talking and I'll forget exactly what I was going to say. Okay.
Whenever that happens, I'll be with a guest, say like Gerald Celente or G. Edward Griffin, you know, like massive guests who just like, you want to ask him a really good question. You know, you want to give him your A gold, and you know for a fact that they're going to talk, and when they talk, they're going to talk for a while, and that you're going to question with, and then by the time they stop talking, you want to then ask those questions, right? Type the correct fucking question into your Skype chat, bro, to remind you. Every time.
That's what you do when you're typing. Okay, gotcha.
Every time.
I've seen that several times.
Have you? But before you start typing, because you'll hear this. Before you start typing, mute your microphone. And then just quickly type out your question, or even in shorthand. And then when the time comes to ask your question or make your point, you know, because sometimes I'll come up with you just got to put commas in between them. You know, like there's that thing, like two words, and that'll remind me of the question that I want to ask too. And then maybe a word, and that'll remind me of a statement that I wanted to make or an example that I wanted them to elaborate on or something like that. And so by the time they finish speaking, I have two examples that I want to say, one to illustrate the point that they're saying for the listeners, one to illustrate a point I'd like to make to them, and thirdly, to make a qualifying question about what they've just said. So you get this boom, 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 boom type of effect, and makes you appear very professional, when the reality is I'm just typing shorthand and thinking up questions and just not losing my train of thought, because I knew I'd lose my train of thought and typed it down because of it.
See, to me, that's golden. You know, that's knowledge, because this has been something that's happened at least once per interview and a couple times with you, because this is my first two-hour thing. You're like, what do you want to do, 2 hours, 4 hours? It's like, you know, you didn't say 4 hours, but I know you probably have another 2 hours you're going to do here shortly with your own show, or you're done.
I finished my show just before we started this one.
Wow. Have you ate lunch yet?
Nope. But I did make myself a big curry last night, you know, on the slow cooker, and, you know, some nice fresh vegetables in there. And this morning I just like chowed it down. I chowed down so much I couldn't eat. Oh, man, I'm really full. And now it's like nearly 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I haven't eaten since like 9:30 in the morning, and I'm still feeling, you know, nice and chipper and happy and healthy and full of energy and what have you. It might have to do with the fact that I've had like about 8 scoops of coffee today.
Is that what you use to keep going?
Yeah. And that's another thing. Yeah. People ask me, Vinny, where do you get your energy from? It's not fucking rocket science. Fuel yourself on caffeine.
Are you a morning?
I had so much coffee that I had to come up with a new word for what I am—a caffeined.
Yeah, it's 6:52, and I have my coffee here. I had to have before. I'm a morning guy. I'm up at 4 in the morning. This is actually kind of late. It's almost my bedtime. You know, are you a morning guy or a nighttime guy?
I've become neither. I don't like getting up early, and I don't like staying up too late anymore.
What time you get up?
Usually around 8 or 9 in the morning ish.
Gotcha. That's interesting. And go right to your show, pretty much. You eat a little breakfast. What do you have for breakfast usually?
Either leftovers, but if I have to make a real breakfast, you know, just quickly fry up some eggs and pop them on some toast, and go out to the garden, chuck some parsley and some chives and some sage on them or something like that, you know.
Yeah. Do you live in an apartment or a house?
It's a house that's been turned into apartments. Like you know, back in the day when people actually have to had like big families. And they'd have a house with several rooms and stuff like that. Well, I live in one of those houses, but it's been cut in three, so that the previous owner of the house, who's now just basically living here, and her son manages the property, and we live in the aft section of the house. And yeah, it's quite a nice big green backyard, and yeah, it's okay.
Where's Auckland? Is that close to the coast, or is that on the coast?
If you're in New Zealand,
you're on the coast.
Okay, you're on an island, bro. Everything's close to the coast.
For sure. I'm just not familiar with New Zealand. I haven't did a lot of studying. How big is the island total, as far as miles?
Do you know how big England is?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's about the same
size. No, I don't know. I mean, I've seen it on a map, so it's about the same size. When I think of islands here in California, we think of there's the Hawaiian Islands. Is it similar? Do you know if they're similar? Not a lot
way,
bigger?
Way, way more massive than
the. So that's what I was thinking. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know.
So you could still be in New Zealand and be in the interior and be an hour, 2 hours from the coast, right, though? But that's not a super long way. I know that.
Approximately 90% of New Zealand's population live within 30 minutes of the nearest beach.
Okay. Gotcha.
And
do you go to the beach at all there yourself?
No, not really. In fact, I would like to. It's just I was just so freaking tired, you know. I talk about how all the stuff really isn't that that hard, but you know, the fact of the matter is you get exhausted doing it, because you're sitting here, you're in front of a screen for hours on end, and you just when the missus comes home and she says, "Baby, we're going to go for a walk," I'm just too tired, and I was, oh man, I can't. And we were chowing back on fast food and stuff like that for a month, and I gained like 10 kilos in a month. And we just stopped eating all that stuff. Now I was like, "Whoa, that's fucking dangerous!" You know, before I know it, I'd be one of those 400-pound douchebags who literally can't leave the house. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you got to take care of your health, Vinny. You know, if you don't have that, how old are you now?
28.
28. Yeah, I'm 41, going to be 42. You know, and if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. You know, so take care of your health, brother. And I suggest that you definitely try to cut it down on your workload. I don't know if there's a way to do that with American Freedom Radio, but it'll probably benefit you more in the long run. Just alone your relationship with your girlfriend, who I assume you love very much, and you know, you have the stress of the work that you're doing. You know, you're obligated to us, but you got to be obligated to yourself, bro. Because if you don't take care of Vinny, you're not going to be able to disseminate this truth and do everything that you're doing.
It's
right?
a delicate balance. So on the one hand, you've got work. Okay, now everybody got to work. That's the old mind play game anyway. And then you got your love, my princess, Sarah, and then you got yourself. Okay, and I'm not sure what comes first, second, or third. You know, like
you got to put yourself first in a way. You put yourself first. You put them all on the same level. But you take care of yourself first, you know, Vinny, and then you got to love yourself. You got to treat yourself good. You got to try to stop eating that fast food all the time.
Oh, I did. I did. As soon as I noticed how big I was going and how depressed it was making me, gone.
Like here I – just so you know, I eat a burger every week, but we go to a place. It's called Elevation Burger here in Carlsbad. I live near the beach as well. And it's grass-fed beef, and then they deep-fry the fries. They're hand-cut potatoes and, like, the olive oil. So that's, like, our thing. And then we have our little pizza, and we do the boboli kind of pizza. You know, we put vegetables on it. So that's kind of our thing, to still eat and have those foods that we like and then not poison ourselves as much, you know. And it's organic primarily.
Yeah, I mean, we're growing a lot of our own vegetables in the backyard, and herbs and things of that nature. And I've been a bit of a cook ever since I was 5 years old, when my mother taught me how to make lasagna. And so I'm always got the ability to cook something up, you know, make us a nice curry. Or a fry, or some spaghetti bolognese with some spinach leaf in it, and that kind of stuff. And it's really kind of kicked off within the last couple of weeks since Sarah quit her job working for a garden maintenance company, that we've been reduced in income, that we literally couldn't afford the fast food even if we wanted to. But we realized that we didn't want it anyway. And so I just basically went back to cooking heaps. And I think the reason why we were doing the fast food is because, A1, we were both so freaking exhausted. Like, it was so hot from the summer here. We were, like, sweaty and stuff like that. That makes you so exhausted. You can't be bothered doing anything.
Cook, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And now that it's getting a little bit cooler, it's not quite so every single day. And it's so much easier to just cook a nice, healthy, decent meal full of vegetables, vitamins and minerals and natural herbs and spices and things of that nature.
So the summer there would be the winter here, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. The time seasons. Are you feeling a lot better now that you're starting to eat this stuff and cut out the fast food?
Oh, absolutely. I was just virtually incapable, like slothful, I think would be the appropriate word. And that was something that occurred to me, like really hit you like a ton of bricks. It's like, oh my God, this food tastes really good. It's relatively cheap and it's a lot easier than cooking, but it makes me look like shit, feel like shit, and... and it's shit food, so you know, you are what you eat. I was turning myself into shit.
Literal shit.
Yeah.
And who knows exactly what they put in it? We really don't know sometimes.
No, we really don't know. Apparently, one of the Colonel's secret herbs and spices is MSG.
Is it really?
No.
Do you like...
No, it is. All right.
What about here's the next thing. So you're taking care of the food that you're putting in yourself. That's great. What about the physical? Because I work in front of the computer myself hours a day, and I've been doing it for going on 7 years now. And I know if I don't get out there, it's tough. Not just physically, but your body, because you know we're not really meant to do this, to sit, you know, in front of a computer, in front of all these electronics, and have all this.
You're not meant to sit full stop. You know, sitting is really, at all. Really bad for you. Really bad for you.
And I'm 41 and I'm feeling it. You know, I do, I've been doing martial arts and different things to help me, with my stretching and then also working out lately. And
you're in California. You'd understand the game hacky sack, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a master at hacky sack, and you'd be surprised how much calories you can burn off. Just keep trying to keep this little ball in the air, you know, cause you,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You need, getting really high, like other people
jumping
are
on
like,
one leg, right? You're jumping on one leg, kicking each side.
Oh,
your
yeah.
weight, you're Gotcha.
I mean, I do it sort of like extreme hacky. Like if there was a Shaolin monk who played hacky sack, he would look not entirely dissimilar to how I do it. Like I'm actually doing like full on side kicks with my leg above my head and kind of stuff, you know, like I really do it in an athletic fashion. And because the shows, God, I love American Freedom Radio so much. The schedule's so good, man. Like, you know how a lot of shows, they get in and there's an ad break every 5 fucking minutes and pisses you off something chronic. American Freedom Radio, the first segment is 17 minutes long. And the ad breaks, instead of being like 2 minutes and then back to the action, it's 4 minutes. Okay? So you have exactly the amount of time you need to go outside, get yourself worked up and get your heart rate up and everything and back in. You can do that 5 to 6 times per show. Right?
Wow.
And that's actually your half hour of daily recommended intense high heart rate exercise. And more to the point, your body is tricking itself when it's doing that, because your testosterone levels and how your body burns fat gets triggered when you're doing intense workouts. But mm-hmm. it switches between them. Like if you do a half an hour of straight exercise, your body goes, okay, we're doing half an hour of straight exercise, so it burns fat at a certain level, and it kind of drops off a little bit, it plateaus. But if you're doing really intense and then stop, and then you're resting, and then all of a sudden you do really intense again, you're always maintaining it at that really high level of fat burning and energy.
Interesting. I've heard that before, and that's a freaking cool idea, because you know, like we're doing the show, we're almost coming up on 2 hours, and I know we're going to be ending here shortly, but it's a pain in the ass to sit for 2 hours. You know, I mean, I know, I'm sure your ass is hurting, and I should have did a break or two. You should have just said, dude, are you going to take a break or something? But I appreciate it. You went, this is probably like nothing for you, but it definitely wears on you. So you're doing hacky sack, you're doing things to keep busy and physical.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure, brother. I know it's like, it's like I don't know you. I just met you, you know, but I feel like I know you because I've been watching you for like a year and a half. And I know a lot of the people that watch you feel the same, you know, and it's only when we get to talk to you. And, you know, I know there's a lot of guests that you have on multiple times on your show, and it's cool what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. The help that I'm going to offer you, it's from the bottom of my heart. It's like I'm a fan as well. You inspired me. You're one of my inspirations because I've been watching about a few people on the sidelines, you know, what they do and to do their shows and promote it. So you give me a lot of ideas. You helped me out today with some great ideas. It's cool to learn about you as a person, you know, and I thank you for coming on my show, Vinny. And like I said, I'll send you an email with all that stuff. We'll talk here in a second. We'll end the show. But you could find Vinny at VinnyEastwoodShow.com.
The Vinny Eastwood Show.
I'm here right now.
There's only one Vinny Eastwood. He's me. And Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood doesn't go ahead, make my news.
My wife has actually asked, are you related to Clint Eastwood?
No, but this is a signed picture of Xenia Warrior Princess with a little inscription on there to her cousin, Vinny Eastwood.
Oh, wow. So you're related to her?
Yeah.
Wow. I used to actually watch that show when I was a bit younger. I think it was about 15 years ago. That was really a popular show, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's interesting. You might be related to Clint. You never know. You know, he might be the American version of the Eastwood over here, and you're the New Zealand version of Eastwood.
Well, I'm not sure. It's not a terribly common name, but I think it is a name that deserves to be in lights.
Definitely. And I've studied genealogy and names, and usually when you have the same name as someone, you're related somehow, just so you know that.
Apparently Aladdin also studied genealogy.
Where's Vinny Eastwood head? First, two questions to end the show. New World Order, where do you see this New World Order going? As far as everything, is it slowly they're going to have Vinny Eastwood on a guillotine in a FEMA camp? Or is there the other possibility, the other Y in the road where it could be, this is all a ruse and this is just a game, and eventually we're going to be in heaven on earth as soon as they get rid of all the slaves that eat all the poison and get cancer.
Well, in occasions like this, I like to refer to sci-fi movie quotes. One from Terminator: "There is no fate, but what we make for ourselves. The world will turn out exactly as we choose to make it. If people stand up, if people do something, if people expose scumbaggery and help each other, we will not be exterminated. We will not be enslaved anymore. We will be free. I'm doing my part. Are you, listeners? You know, think about that. How much are you really doing? Are you being part of the New World Order agenda, or are you against it? And more to the point, are you trying to just rail against these people because they want to do bad things to you and you want to stop these bad things from happening? Or trying to create a new system that makes the existing system obsolete? That's what I'm trying to do. And I hope many other people will follow my example and the examples of many others that I'm following. No man is an island."
No, that's cool. That's a great way to end it with New World Order, the quote right there. That's awesome, Vinny. And I like how you can, you know, there's not a piece of paper hanging in front of you, you know, saying that. That's all internalized and it's from your heart, bro. And you talk from your heart. And that's what we realize. And I'm one of those guys, again, that you inspired. You know, there's I like Henrik Palmgren from Red Ice Creations. He's cool. Santos Bonacci. You know, there's several guys like you out there. And there's a lot of guys like us that are into the truth and the real shit, you know, and we're not the average truth guy, but we're willing to take that step and do the blog and do a show like this, you know, and it's guys like you that inspire us, bro. And I'm 41, you know, and you're this 28-year-old guy here in New Zealand, you know, making me laugh, and my wife, you know, you never knew me, you don't know, you know, and I know you don't know the guests all the time, but who gives a fuck? You know, because you're spreading love, you're spreading truth, and you're spreading knowledge. And to me, that's the most valuable thing, the most valuable commodity in the world. And we're going to change this world by that, you know, and being a different voice. And I'll be the one in San Diego. I'm going to be the guy that helps you with your website. You know, I don't need any recognition. I just want to help you make a little bit more money and then help you just showcase everything just perfectly. And we'll work over that in the next few weeks or the next month. Doing that. And then to end the show, what's the last thing or the next thing for Vinny Eastwood? Is this it? Are you going to keep going on this path, or do you have a little dream side project or anything that you're going to work on that you might want to let us know about?
Imagine for a moment that every single form of media that currently exists can be put under one umbrella. So you have a video studio, a movie studio, and a television studio, and a radio studio, and you have a printing press for magazines and so on and so forth, the means of production, like Rupert Murdoch. That's what I'm hoping to do, really, to create a massive media entity. You know how they got all those million-dollar studios? Dude, I'm a New Zealander, okay? There were people in this country who had a tractor breakdown, who had to wait 6 months for a part to come in from overseas. They had to fix it with a piece of number 8 wire, fencing wire. They managed to fix tractors. They managed to make everything work again with very, very little resources. Here today, with less than, I don't know, probably say less than $4,000 worth of equipment around me, I'm able to do the work of the TV3 news program, which has been given a $40 million bailout by the government because they can't get enough fucking advertising revenue. I want to give this technology and the ability and the training to other people like you, like me, to get these sorts of products, media, that actually makes a difference. You know, people like my friend Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine here. I want to give the training and the facilities to these people. And this includes music. And I'm a bit of a musician myself as well. In fact, would you like me to close off with a song? I can play you one.
Sure, do it.
All right. Anyway, so Prime Suspect. Yeah. This is my bandmate and me, Mikhail. He's about, and he's an incredible guitarist. And I come up with songs off the top of my dome, you know, like a rap artist, except I sing them out rather than rap them out, kind of thing. And that's just sort of one of my unique talents, is being able to come up with a whole song straight off the top of my head. So and then we
that,
just
yeah, that is unique.
And then we rework them and re-record them and have a little bit of fun on it. So yeah, I'll play this one for you. This is Mikhail's favorite one that we've done so far. He reckons it's the best recording we've ever done. It's called Prime Suspect, and our band is the Pākehāchis. In New Zealand, a Pākehā is a white person. Okay, it's a Māori word. And a mariachi, as you probably know living in California, is a Spanish musician. So we're the Pākehāchis.
You know what's so funny is this is the one video I saw of you today. I was good. I've seen several videos, but I saw this one of you on your channel today. Go for it.
All right.
So was a prime suspect. Uniforms. I was a prime suspect.
But sauce.